Captain Henry Evelyn Arthur Platt continued. Letter, 18th of March 1916, 1st Battalion Coldstream Guards, British Expeditionary Force. My darling girl, out of your great big heart, try and forgive your hub for being worse than a pig and not writing. It is indeed a crime which merits severe condemnation. Mon ami, forgive me. We have been practicing all sorts of peacetime manoeuvres, which of course are strange to an ex-cavalryman, n'est-ce pas? But I think that I've mastered them well enough. But in the mastering, the effort takes the power to write from one. We are having spats tomorrow, which will be pleasant. That is, once held, we shall not have to spat again for some time. As you know, I'm a miserable athlete, but I think the men will enjoy them. Saw an ex-19th Hussar today, who came some way to see me. He was a reservist and transferred voleur to the infantry. Always a bad walker, he did not find carrying a pick of much advantage, so they put him in the transport. It was kind of him to come, and I appreciate his thought. He used to be Bowden's groom. My own, cigarettes just come for the men. Sing song tomorrow evening, which I hope will go well. There is to be beer, and their cigs will help things along. I see in the paper there is a lull at Verdun. Also, talk of peace. I wonder how long it will be. I still hold to September 1916. Don't you think so? What a nice little bonne bouche if the Smuts affairs come off. And I think it ought. Delightful chum is for Egypt. It will do him good to be sent to the sun for a while. Great work on Rita's part. You Carmacks are wonders. Apparently Gambo is having a successful time. It'll be interesting for her if she sees Tratchum, Fiancé and Semelier. Glad Eric is being nice about his fees. As you say, it was Buddhist luck. I hear the old Turks, or rather young Turks, are for settling down comfortable-like if they can. Truly they are being spared by the Almighty, for some very good reason. It would have been a wonderful end to the war, celebrating the downfall of the Hun in St. Sophia. But, like Bernard Shaw, the Almighty does not prefer too definite a last act. I am wondering how you like the verses we wrote. They make a splendid song. Lawrence's Gov knows D. Hague, and he's going to send a copy of it to him, I think. We're going to write another combined song some day. Rather amusing 7 or 8 authors to one song. Go and see a play now and then, my own. Please enjoy yourself for me, as I shall feel it. Not many chokes, i.e. jokes, flying about. I miss the tricks I used to crack with Maclean. We shall soon be into spring, and then one will be able to arrange faults pour s'amuser. The present still too cold for hanging about. All my love, my own, Arthur. Letter, 31st of March, 1916. Presents for all men. 1st Coldstream Guards, British Expeditionary Force. P.S. This is the 1st of April, the day of our engagement. I refuse to make you think I'm joking again. Try not worry about non-essentials as to money. The floods of spring are out on the Russian front, which makes it none too supportable for the Hun. And nous qui vous parlons are, touch wood, holding our own. Did you read in the Daily Mail the English are holding a quarter of the Western Front? Arras to the sea. An inspiring thought. The English may not be brilliant, but they are an unpleasant band to encircle you. Some may run, but there are others, the great majority, who do not. The Huns can shell, ye gods they can. But by the grace of a greater God, we mean to stand it. Don't worry your dear darling little head. This letter is not written on 2 bottles of port, but after 4 days in the, I should say, worst trenches in France. But the men were never in better heart, and Lannes is in good heart too. Don't let me become grandiloquent, as the horrid god of irony is always about, as you will agree. But somehow, somewhere, the river of life seems to be running safe to sea. We watched the Huns shelling from a point of vantage yestreen. It was an interesting spectacle. Country where once had been a tern of pinewood, transformed into a stunted knoll, with a moulted pine stump or two to mark the place. No, the greatest liar would not have risked his lack of reputation to swear to its identity. Just this rise on the left, and in the night a broken avenue of trees that guard over surely the most historic road in history. Perhaps we lack many things, my own. The power to visualize small details and their effects. But in the big, the Englishman triumphs. I remember Miller Maguire lecturing on the defences of the northwestern frontier, saying that perhaps our defensive were weak in places. History has proved that the broadest river and the highest chain of impossible mountains is only our line of defence. The real line is the spirit of youth. So don't get upset. Tout va bien. Read Henry V von Agincourt. Read Vanity Fair and laugh. Tout va bien. Don't make any error. From the commercial point of view, the English will score. England holds a quarter of the Western Front. This is a strange love letter, but takes with it the love of the best lanners of the many strange varieties. Now, my child, please write and ask A. Mrs. Herbert Samuelson, 58 Grosvenor Street, London. B. Mrs. T. S. Dixon, 12 Welbeck House, Wigmore Street, London, to lunch. Mrs. Samuelson is the mother of young Samuelson of this company. Mrs. Dixon is the wife of Dixon of this company. Ask them to the Batch Club to form a committee of friendliness to number 2 company, 1st Coldstream Guards. Quite informal, et pour l'amour de Dieu, unofficial. Just to send things that don't matter now and then. Dixon and Samuelson have both written by this post, so have I, wherefore Mrs. Dixon and Mrs. Samuelson will both know what you are driving at. Now, as to general principles, my idea, our idea, is that it is invidious for one man to get things, and another not. It is a mistake for, say, one man of 5 to receive a cadeau. Better for each man to wait till his pal has one. That's why I suggest a meeting between you ladies, so that when you are feeling generous, you can push all at once and all together and send all the parcels out so that they arrive at the same time for every man. The company roughly numbers 200, about 160 to fight and 40 or so in other jobs. So to start it in an uncomplicated way, if you send 200 of anything to, mark it well, the officers, number 2 company, 1st Coldstream Guards, the men will receive the same benefits all at the same time. That's the idea of the cooperation. We'll arrange it here for the other 40 to get others, and if the triumvirate really works nicely together, they can be sent in the exact and not round numbers, so that all will go well. The things we suggest: towels to dry with at the bath, sauces or relishes such as Worcester, etc., to eat with cold meat or tranché, sweets, pickles, handkerchiefs, khaki, writing blocks, pencils, soup squares, soap, mouth organs, low and all of the same key. The preceding are a few to ring the changes on. But bear this in mind, only send things to distribute quickly and that don't weigh much. Send them nicely packed in an attractive way. Send a nice message with each. Make it personal. If people want their gifts appreciated, the care counts. I suggest a little printed label. Good luck to number 2 company, or second thoughts, perhaps not. No, decidedly not. This is the best way. In each parcel, let the writer put one card in her own writing, saying who it comes from. P.S. Sorry for being so frightfully extravagant, but would you please send 300 francs in 50-franc notes to Lannes, or so vite que possible. P.S. Excellent idea, Mrs. Hocknall, illustrating the Peter Pan songs. Why not? A. With J.E. as motive. B. With General or Gerald de Moria as sponsors to Barry. Letter, 9th of April 1916. More on Comfort Committee. We are busy inspecting and refitting, which is the usual course. Have not seen young Roy or Reggie. Have been too busy with these men of splendid heart, who grow more splendid every day. Don't believe Kitchener officers on the salient. They talk through their hats. Even Ian Hay has not sufficient knowledge to tell good from bad, disorganisation from demoralisation. Two very different things. Letter from wife Ella, 7th of May 1916, Kingwood, Thames Ditton. My darling one, I am sorry, but I have missed the post to you today, the first time since August the 17th, 1914. I think, but it was not my fault. Went to church, and on the way back visited Gland Fry, who looks very seedy. That devilish nurse of hers has worried her more than I can say, and on top of it, she has not seen a doctor for 10 months, and is just about at the end of her tether. Poor little girl! I feel very sorry for her, because she's been so plucky all through. I do hope he will get a flying bat and have to come home to it. She needs him badly, and I know just what she is feeling like. After leaving GE yesterday, met Mr. Campbell and walked to the house with him. Mrs. C was in front and sailing along in my old Macintosh. She said to me, I feel very guilty because I am wearing a Macintosh which does not belong to me, and we can't make out whose it is. Tableau! When I said I had lent it to young Mr. C one day a year ago, they did laugh. Came here to find Carlos B and a young lady who I hope he was not going to marry. She's a friend of Jean, Jeanette's, and from Newfoundland. Pas mal, but a bromide. Carlos in great heart, and nice as ever. They had motored down and stayed to lunch, and only left at 6 p.m, so I could not write for the post. Thorny and a Mrs. Christopher Lowther also came, and I suspect by now you know why they came. Deb has gone away with the flying man après tout, and Sue is with her. Has Ernest seen you yet about her? I won't write to him just now, because the less put on paper the better. But please tell him to look upon Kingwood as a home, and tell him that I would love to have Sue. Somehow, I thought Deb meant no business the last time I saw her, as she had said that she would not do anything till after the war. I thought and hoped that all would be well, but enough of that. I put a very tired Oily to bed tonight. He is just a little bit out of sorts, as it has been very muggy and damp since our return, and it's a big change after the heavy rain. He fell down too, to add to the worry, and cut his knee and both hands pretty badly. It was a job getting the gravel out, and he cried rather, which made him very tired. He was just mummy's baby, and rested his head on my shoulder when I undressed him, and he was asleep in 5 minutes. Nan has a day off tomorrow, so I shall have them all to myself, which will be a great joy. The further pages missing, as back of her letter, was used in following letter from Henry. Deb, referred to in the above letter, is the wife of H.E. A. Platt's brother, who is also serving in the Coldstream Guards, and Sue is their daughter. Last letter to wife, 11th of May, 1916. My darling girl, I have plenty of paper, but it is at my billet, so please excuse me writing on the back of your letter. I enclose John's letter, incidentally, Report we are conquerors. Not much news at all at moment. As to Teresto's affair, even now I can hardly. And a pity she couldn't have done it before and saved us all a great deal of bother. I think she wants a good smacking. It is such a mess. Of course I'll tell him your message, Ray Kingwood. But he's such a quaint old bird. He means letting Dot keep Suzanne because her friend is so good and she's made such a good mother. Mon Dieu. It's no good taking him seriously. We've had rather an amusing letter, Ray officers giving away information and letters. It is a notorious fact men who really do the fighting are far less inclined to bark about things in their letters than the other red-tabbed gents who have no one to say their name. If you have fought Huns for a while at fairly close quarters, you do not feel dead loud to give anything away. I'm so sorry the oily is out of sorts. I hope he'll soon be better. Duff Warmington is back. He is full of bounce and heart, so I now have three officers, him, Samuelson, and Dixon. This month I took them for a nice walk in the country among the green fields, far from the front line. Black Knight is outside, waiting to go riding, so I must go, my darling, as he doesn't like being at the front. He sends you his best respects. It's the real turning point. It is late, but not too late, n'est-ce pas? All my love, Arthur. 1st Battalion Coldstream Guards War Diary, 12th to the 15th of May, 1916. 12th of May. The battalion entrained for the trenches at 8 p.m. relieved the 4th Battalion Grenadier Guards in the right sector of the line. 13th of May. Ypres trenches, AI sector. Fairly quiet day. A certain amount of rifle grenading up at Railway Wood. A few casualties from same, but was stopped after we had replied to it. 14th of May. Rainy day. Some shelling towards the south. 15th of May, 1916. Captain H.E.A. Platt killed in action and Lieutenant G.B.F. Samuelson wounded while out wiring outside Railway Wood. Bright, moonlit night. Obituaries. The Daily Express understands that Captain H.E.A. Platt of 1st Battalion Coldstream Guards was killed in action on Tuesday. It is believed that he went out to fetch one of his company officers who was wounded. Captain Platt was mentioned in dispatches last year, was gassed last May while serving with the 19th Hussars, and was wounded in December. He was known as a fearless officer and was worshipped by his men. He had 9 years' service with the 19th Hussars. He went out to wire when it was very bright moonlight at a place where he thought that wire was essential, and in his gallant way he would not ask a soul to do what he would not set them the example of doing. His brother Ernest, who was also serving in the Coldstream Guards, wrote, "Evelyn was killed at 3 o'clock this morning, helping in one of his company officers. He was wounded in front of the trenches. He will be a great loss to his battalion. He is to be buried this evening. I hope to get some time tonight." From the Eton College Chronicle, June 3, 1916. The war cloud hangs heavy over Eton. On entering the precincts of the upper school, there is a roll of honour, Etona non immemor, on chapel wall of Eton's sons who have made the great surrender in the war. It now reaches 600 names or thereabouts, and there is now to be added Captain Henry Evelyn Arthur Platt, Coldstream Guards, whose anonymous lines, only the other week in the College Chronicle, attracted attention. They were addressed to a soldier. "Say not of him he left this vale of tears, who loved the good plain English phrase, he died, nor state he nobly lived or otherwise, failed or succeeded, friends, just say he tried." School friends recall his cheerfulness and courage, and love of gardens, picnics, and poetry. He always wrote of himself as a scug at Eton, because he had won no glory at work or games, but it was to be wiped out some day. And just a year ago he wrote, "I happen to have been left behind to hand over the line and explain necessary details. We pulled through, after the gas had passed and we had got the show running again. For the first time in my life, I felt a scug was as good as anyone else." The day after his death, a brother officer wrote, "Here in the company, one feels there has gone the life and soul, as it were, the father of us all. The men worshipped him, an old soldier, once gassed, once wounded. After 21 months of warfare, he retained and infused into others that spirit of the old army that regarded difficulties as things to be overcome. Last night, I think, there passed to join the great company of friends who have fallen in the war one of the bravest and best loved by officers and men." Another officer wrote, "We shall have no longer with us that wondrously vital, optimistic, energetic spirit of the boy's heart and lion's courage, the idealist and man of action, the poet and leader of men. He is no longer with us, but some day the cause will triumph because he tried." He is buried in Brandhoek Military Cemetery, grave reference 2B8. Probate. Platt, Henry Evelyn Arthur of Kingwood, Thames Ditton, Surrey, died 15th of May 1916 in Belgium, killed in action. Probate, London, 11th of November, to Herbert Hodder Roberts, Major retired in HM Army, Charles Schiff, Engineer, and Leonard Watson, Bank Manager. Effects, £11,028, 3 shillings and 4 pence. His wife, Ella Carmichael. Ella was born in 1885 and was the daughter of Isabella and William Chalmers Carmichael of Inelen, Pietermaritzburg, Natal, South Africa, who was an advocate in Maritzburg. She had a sister May and a younger brother Chalmers Chum Carmichael, who went through the Southwest campaign with Bertha's horse. He took up ostrich farming in the Cape Province and ultimately stock farming in Umvoti County before joining the war. He was a lance corporal in the South African Infantry and was about to join the 1st 8th Battalion of the Sherwood Foresters as a second lieutenant, but was killed aged 28 on the 15th of July 1916 during the Battle of the Somme with the attack on Delville Wood. His sergeant major wrote, "I regret to learn of your son's death. He was one of my best bayonet instructors while in Bernafe Wood. I picked him out to go to the rear and bring up our relief. To do this, he had to make his way through the wood under terrific shell fire and guide the relieving troops back to us in the dark. He carried out his duty without a hitch, and as you will readily understand, the slightest mistake on his part might have meant disaster for those under his care. We had a dreadful time there, and poor old A Company suffered heavily." 5 years after the death of her husband, Henry, Ella, aged 36, married on the 5th of October 1921, Major Cecil Rookhurst Wigan, M.C., aged 25, who was born in July 1896 in Hampshire and who served in the Welsh Guards. However, in January 1928, she filed for divorce, stating that he'd had an affair and had taken her money. Ella then married the Duke Ocelin de Topor of Mexico. She died aged 53 in 1939. After her death, her brother-in-law, Ernest Platt, posted an advert in search of her sisters. Will the sisters of the late Duchess Ocelin de Topor, nay, Ella Carmichael, communicate with Ernest Platt, Anglo-American Agency? They may hear of something to their advantage. Cecil Rookhurst Wigan then married Maud Wishart McKelvey on the 22nd of October 1947. Maud was the widow of Albert Kirby Fairfax, 12th Lord Fairfax of Cameron, and had two grown-up children, one Thomas Bryan McKelvey Fairfax, 13th Lord Fairfax of Cameron, born 14th of May 1923, and two Honorable Peregrine John Wishart Fairfax, born 8th of March 1925. He lived at 32 Cadogan Lane, London, and died on the 23rd of October 1958 at the Ackland Nursing Home in Oxfordshire, leaving £44,409, 0 shillings and 10 pence to Maud. Maud then married thirdly Brigadier Felix Alexander Vincent Copland Griffiths. She died on the 18th of September 1973. His son, John Evelyn Platt. His son, John Evelyn Platt, was living in Mexico in 1955 and took legal action against his stepfather, Ocelin, the Duke of Topor, over the amount of money he was receiving. John Evelyn Platt died a bachelor in Mexico on April the 3rd, 1960, aged 47, with his extensive fortune going to his aunts Mary Carmichael Davison and Jessie Ross Carmichael Shipley. His brother, John Ernest Hodder Platt. John Ernest Hodder Platt was born on the 16th of July 1880 in Anglesey. He became a second lieutenant in the 5th Battalion, the Rifle Brigade, on the 14th of December 1889, and then transferred to the Coldstream Guards on the 27th of June 1900 for 3 years before becoming a reserve officer on the 17th of October 1903. He married on the 11th of June 1906 Mildred Deborah Green, who was the daughter of Major General Sir William Henry Rhodes Green, KCSI, CB, 1823-1912, who was the son of Vice Admiral Sir Andrew P. Green. They had a daughter, Suzanne Deborah Elise Platt, who was born on the 24th of January, 1908. In 1911, John Ernest Hodder Platt was living aged 31 at 63 Prince's Gate, Belgravia, London, with his wife Mildred Deborah Platt, aged 23, their 3-year-old daughter Suzanne Deborah Elise Platt, a nurse, a cook, a lady's maid, 4 housemaids, a kitchen maid, a scullery maid, and 2 footmen. At the outbreak of the First World War, he joined the Foot Guards as a second lieutenant on the 19th of August 1914, and then served in the Coldstream Guards. His wife ran off with a pilot, E.L. Hogg, in 1916, and the marriage was dissolved in 1920. 1 year later, on the 24th of January 1922, he married Marie Claire Michalescu, daughter of Colonel A. Mihaiscu of the Russian Army, Jura Padini, Corabia, Romania. Ernest lived at La Maison des Pommiers Sark, Channel Islands, and was a member of the Guards Club and the Royal Automobile Club. They had a son, John Evelyn Luca Blasey Platt, who was born on the 24th of September 1930 in Beechwood Nursing Home, Guernsey. By 1956, he had lost contact with his nephew, John Evelyn Henry Platt, and posted a newspaper advert to try and regain contact, believing him to be residing in Mexico. Mr. Ernest Platt, late Coldstream Guards, would be much obliged if any present legal representative of Mr. John Evelyn Henry Platt, my nephew, believed to be residing in Mexico, communicate as much with me at the above at his Villa Prey, Maritz Auslass. He died aged 80 on the 5th of October 1960 at Villa Primartini, Alassio, Italy, leaving a widow, Thelma Thurston Platt. Probate. Platt, John Ernest Hodder, of Villa Primartini, Alassio, Italy, died 5th of October 1960. Probate, London, 24th of January, to Thelma Thurston Platt, widow, Percy William Clifford Goodchild, retired captain, HM Army, and William Frederick Langdon, Air Commodore, RAF, effects £3,025, 10 shillings and 1 pence in England. John's daughter, Suzanne, married Agostini Lanfranchi in 1934 in Marylebone. Agostino was born in Palazzolo, Italy, on the 24th of June, 1892, and was in the Italian Olympic four-man bobsleigh team, finishing fourth in 1928 in St. Moritz and fifth in 1932 in Lake Placid. After the First World War, where he served in the Italian Army as a motorcycle courier and won the Military Cross, he moved to England, where he won many motor races with his Alfa Romeo and was the owner of the trading company A. Lanfranchi Limited, which marketed the famous Lanfranchi button for the family firm. In 1940, he left England for Italy and spent his last years in Capri, where he died on the 15th of February, 1963. Suzanne died on the 30th of December, 1989, in Bexhill, Sussex. John's son, John Evelyn Luca Blasey Platt, died on the 20th of October 2002 at Savona Liguria, Italy. His cousins also killed in the war. Three of his cousins were also killed in the war. Two were within 6 weeks of his own death in the spring of 1916. On the 27th of March 1916, John Rookhurst Platt, who was a lieutenant in the Royal Field Artillery, was killed near Hill 60, Ypres. On the 30th of April 1916, Edmund Ernest Charles Wellesley, who was a captain in the 9th Norfolk Regiment, was killed by a shell on the canal bank near Ypres. On the 13th of April 1917, Lionel Sidney Platt, who was a pilot in the Royal Flying Corps and who H.E.A. Platt had been at Eton with, was shot down and killed near Vitry-en-Artois. Further details of their war records and a family tree can be seen at www.stanwardine.com. References: the letters, diaries, school reports and obituaries of Captain H.E.A. Platt are held at the Imperial War Museum Archives, London. And are organised into 8 boxes. About the author, William Bridge. William Bridge was born in Shropshire and has degrees in Russian and engineering. He's interested in history and in particular the First World War. He lives in London and is married with two children. He is the second cousin, twice removed, of Captain Henry Evelyn, Arthur Platt. Thank you.